to the Friday, July 26, 2019 edition of the Clemson Dubcast. 1 week away from the start of 2019 August camp for the Clemson football team. Kind of hard to believe. Summer is almost over for those of us who have the privilege and honor covering this national championship program. And it doesn't seem like things are going to be changing anytime soon if you're looking at the recruiting. Paul Strilo, always on top of things, had an eye-opening update yesterday, Thursday evening, on the All-In Cookout on Jordan Birch, Justin Flo, and others. Wow, I'm not even a recruiting junkie or anything close to it, and even I am going to be glued to TigerIllustrated.com this weekend for updates. Never a better time than right now to spend basically what amounts to a little more than a six-pack of beer per month. Title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast, Harm Smith Arch and Hole Law Firm in downtown Greenville. They have been with us from the very beginning. Blake Smith has been a good friend of mine for years, dating back to the days when he taught a law class at Clemson with Terry Don Phillips. Also, Brooke Arch and Hole, major Clemson fans. The forte of their firm, which is at 15 Washington Park in Greenville, is medical negligence. They represent patients and their families in medical negligence actions. Also handle all sorts of other personal injury litigation. Free consultations, Harm Smith and Arch and Hole. Give them a call, 864-990-4555. Or go to parhamlaw.com. Big supporter of the Clemson Dubcast is Harris Flooring America. Based in Anderson, South Carolina, Harris Flooring has been instrumental in a lot of the facilities transformation you've seen on Clemson's campus lately. From the Allen Reeves Center to the McFadden Building to Memorial Stadium to the Neary Center, family owned and operated since 1947, the owner, Scott Junkins, big Clemson guy. Harris Flooring is just as good inside the home and the residential realm as they are with the larger scale commercial stuff. Give them a call, 864-642-6183, or online at flooringamerica-anderson.com. All right, this week's podcast guest, Brad Brownell. It's become a yearly tradition to sit down with him over the summer for an extended visit. We had a three-part series with that interview at TigerIllustrated.com earlier this week, and now I'm going to present in audio form part one. I'm going to break it up into two parts. So here's the first half of the interview from Brad Brownell's office last week. Hope y'all enjoy. So really a remarkable run there in Italy, I guess. Three factors come to mind with me. The freshman had just gotten here. You just lost Clyde, of course, and then winning the gold in that event is not common. Are those the dominant sort of achievements, I guess, to you?
Certainly winning the gold was remarkable. I don't know that I would have thought we were going to be able to do that if I was being truthful right at the beginning, because we really were all only together a couple weeks leading into it, and certainly, we'd had Jonathan Bear's injury, but Clyde's on the day before we left or whatnot was really troubling, we thought, for a lot of reasons, but, it was a remarkable experience. It really was. It was a very unifying, I think. Certainly the opportunity of wearing the United States of America jersey, coaching as a United States of America coach, I think initially I was trying to make sure my players really understood what that meant. Because you talk about it, but you don't really know what that means. And you don't feel it, because this wasn't some event that was gaining national news here. Was probably a little bigger in Europe and in some other places. But again, I go back to the opening ceremonies and what we saw at the opening ceremonies with 65,000 people and dressing up in your United States, everybody in the same USA gear, and seeing all the other athletes who were representing the United States of America and all these people from UCLA and, other schools and, It was incredibly memorable, and it was an experience that I mean, you just don't ever get to be a part of something like that. You've seen it on TV, but it electrified our guys. And you could tell, like, all the talk that I'd had for the week leading up to it, man, that really hit home. Once that happened, it really hit home. And then certainly I thought our guys played with incredible passion and energy and effort, and that's really what carried us. Obviously I've watched all the games a couple times already, and I'm rewatching them all again now, and dissecting every player and all the things we did, and our execution was okay, but our energy, our effort, our competitive spirit were off the charts.
I guess it exceeded your expectations.
Absolutely.
Vastly.
Absolutely. Yes. And I knew that it was going to be a really cool thing, but it was made even more special. Obviously, the winning helped, no question. And to just see my players' faces after some of those games, especially, really it started with Finland. I mean, we were kind of in control and then lost the lead, and we really didn't play very well, and then we're down 7 with 3.5 minutes to go, and we come back, and Alex Hemingway, who's, our 11th man probably on the team at that point, comes off the bench and makes a 3 in the second half, and then he gets fouled and makes a 4-point play, and all of a sudden, we went from 7 down to 1 or 2 up, and now we need a stop to win the game, and we get it, and it's like just a little shot in the arm, right at the beginning, and it was something that I talked about with our team the whole 2 weeks leading in and throughout the tournament, that it was kind of the Golden State Warriors deal of strength in numbers, that I thought it was going to be our depth, our energy level, our athleticism, our effort, and we were going to have to try to wear teams down and maybe steal some games late. And we weren't going to be the biggest. We probably weren't going to execute as well as some of the guys that were 23 and 24 years old that had played much more experience international basketball than our team, but that win kind of cemented that message to our players, and that we just really built on it from there.
How would you rate the level of competition in terms of talent, athleticism, coaching?
Coaching was good. I thought the talent was good. These are experienced, older players that really know how to play the game and have very good IQs and instincts. The difference was athleticism. They were big. There were some big teams, 6'9", 6'10", physical, all that. But there wasn't, I told a couple people we didn't play against R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson. We weren't playing against major front court athletes or incredible speed or anything of that nature. There were one or two teams. Canada, we didn't play Canada, but they were really fast. But the quality of play was good. It was good. I don't know how to measure it versus, it's not ACC athleticism, but some of those teams execute better than certain teams in our league, and even executed better than we did in the tournament. But we wore them down with depth and our athleticism and our ability to defend and switch certain things, and just I thought that was our advantage. So it was very, very good. It was very competitive. And as is with basketball and most sports, we were a little bit fortunate. We had some games where the other team had the ball at the end and we need to stop to win, and they got a shot, missed, maybe got the offensive rebound, missed again, and we win by 2. And that happened twice against Germany and Israel in the medal round. And obviously last year's team, those would have both been baskets and we would have lost by 1. It was just kind of we got some breaks. That's part of basketball too, but it just all kind of seemed to flow together, and the passion and spirit that our kids showed, was I was just really proud of them for the way they carried themselves.
Somebody was telling me that when y'all got there, you discovered that they didn't have enough rooms or something, and the guys had to go 4 to a room.
Yeah.
And there was no complaining or anything.
Yeah, I think there was. We were supposed to get 1 or 2 extra rooms, and we knew it was going to probably be maybe, 3 to a room, we figured, but we ended up not getting the extra room until almost the end of the tournament. And So, yeah, we had to put four guys in rooms, you know, three rooms of four, and then a couple of rooms for staff. And, you know, our guys never complained, never, you know, they were just so into the moment. They were just so into the event. You know, there's a newness and a freshness with young guys and a new team and everybody be thrown together, that it's that enthusiasm, that optimism, that wanting to figure out how to be a part of something kind of takes over. That is different. That's one of your advantages sometimes for when you have guys that are older teams and guys are kind of setting their ways a little more, and you're setting into your system and you're setting to how my role and this, that, and the other, it can be, you know, it can be more difficult. And, you know, again, I've said this in other interviews, that I commend Dabo for managing that last year. Like, it's easy to think that just, you know, and certainly all the defensive line coming back, and certainly there's an array of talent that is, you know, crazy amount for that, but you still have to manage all that, and then you have some young five-star guys that are coming in and they want to play and prove, and to manage all that, that's one of Dabo's great strengths, and you know, among many. And so, but we you know, we benefited from that youthful and exuberance, enthusiasm. I was actually talking to one of the football assistants, and I told him, you know, you guys are going to be a little, you're not as maybe as deep or whatnot. I mean, they're still phenomenally talented. We all know that, but that they're gonna really enjoy coaching the football team because there is this changeover, and sometimes change is good, and it reinvigorates everybody in the program, even coaches. You know, it's like new guys coming in that haven't heard you go through all the details of what it's like to post feed and play pick and roll defense five different ways and do the, you know, so it energizes you and it makes you even be a better coach, because you got to go back to coaching every little thing sometimes. And you know, I think that was part of the enthusiasm that we had with our guys on this trip, and everybody just wanting to blend in and fit, and really worrying about the bigger goal at the end than any individual amount of time or being subbed out, because we did take guys in and out a lot more frequently than maybe we have the last couple years with older players.
Sort of to your point about older players kind of being set in their ways, one of the big themes going into last season was the great challenge in the wake of really high achievement, maintaining that chip on the shoulder. What's your view in hindsight of that, and do you have a new appreciation of how difficult that is?
Yes. I mean, I know how difficult it is. I do think, you know, when you achieve a certain level, that's where it becomes more difficult for guys to still keep their focus on exactly the, you know, the team thing. Sometimes when guys get older and they're in their fifth years, and it's a little bit natural that you're going to want to, you know, put yourself in a position for your future. And a lot of times there's voices in their lives that are outside our locker room that aren't, they don't mesh with what we're saying all the time. And so it takes a very mature young man to understand how to flush some of that out. And, you know, there could have been a little bit of that with our team last year. I think there was, you know, there was also, you know, just some injuries that were hard. You know, Eli sprained his ankle at the beginning of the season and was kind of out for three and a half weeks of practice. And I thought that wasn't good for him, and he probably gained a couple extra pounds during that time, and the beginning of the season wasn't where we hoped he would be, and he got there, but Shelton's injury certainly just wasn't the same player as senior year, and we kind of didn't even realize he was playing as hurt as he was until after the season you go back in and look at it and you see that there's a bone that's floating in there, and you know, you knew that he was hurting some, but you know, just, and obviously there's a reason why he didn't play as well. And then just we had some tough losses. And, you know, ultimately that's all my responsibility. And, you know, I'm disappointed with the way last season ended. We were, you know, close. I just hoped if we could get into the tournament, I thought once you get into the tournament, anything can happen. I thought it would have even reinvigorated our team a little bit. But, you know, we didn't quite get it done.
How much practice time did Dawes, Hunter, and Hemingway have before y'all left for Italy?
I'm going to guess that those guys had about 3 weeks.
So much, I guess, in light of that, what was your assessment of how, I guess, comfortable?
I think they're, like, Hemingway is a guy who can make shots and physically is needs to get stronger and tougher defensively to be able to play at the level consistently. But he shows no fear to shoot, as evidenced by the big shot he made at Finland. He doesn't think about it. Like, it's, if he gets a look, he's shooting it. And he's done that in practice ever since he got here. And sometimes you don't really know with players until you're around them every day. You see them in recruiting, you know, you watch them play a couple times, you know, but you don't exactly know what you have. You don't know what makes kids tick. And he's got a quiet confidence about him that is good. He's got a physical deficiency right now that just needs time and weight room. But I do think he has some confidence that good shooters have to have. So I think that's going to serve him well moving forward. Chase Hunter is an elite athlete. He's elite. I mean, he's in the KJ McDaniel mode. Now, he's not going to go lead the league in shot blocks. Obviously, he's a 6'3 guard. But in terms of speed, jumping ability, he's got it at the highest of levels. And it serves him well defensively. And so he's probably a more willing defender and a better defender than we realized when we recruited him. We knew he could be that. We just didn't know if he'd have the want to. But he does seem to have the want to. Offensively, he has ability to do certain things. He can, because of his athleticism, he can create shots. He probably did not shoot the ball as well as we would have liked in the tournament. You know, that's where we come involved. That's where we have to coach him up. We have to get him to where he's a more comfortable, confident offensive shooter, and that'll come with time. But I'm super excited about his want to compete. He's a little quiet right now. We need to change that. He's an unbelievably nice kid. I mean, wow, what a terrific kid! But off the charts athleticism. Guards the ball extremely hard, chases shooters off screens. In the Ukraine game, we put him on a shooter late in the game, and he just fought that guy off screens and did a phenomenal job of defending. So super excited about him. And then Alamir Dawes is kind of he's got good athleticism, good speed. He's got a little bit of wiggle, which creates offense for himself and others by being able to just kind of go by in a small area. He guards the ball hard too. He has a want to for defending. Needs to understand how to play the game without the ball. He's good with the ball in his hands. Right now, when he doesn't have the ball, he really doesn't know what to do. And so there's a learning aspect to his game that's going to drastically improve, you know, as he learns, you know, how to play the game without the ball. But man, he's got guts, not afraid to take and make big shots, made a couple big free throws at the end of certain games. Like, I think he made 4 free throws at 2-2 at the end of certain games to help solidify wins. He's a courageous, confident guy.
It sounds like you think both Dawes and Hunter, like, as far as freshman impact players, as ready as any of the
Yeah, team I think, had. And it's just opportunity. I mean, obviously, there's no Shelton Mitchell and Marquise Reed in front of them. So, yeah, they're going to just, by the nature of the way our team is lined up, they're going to get more opportunities. But yes, absolutely, those are both, you know, higher level recruits than we maybe have been getting all the time. I think, you know, again, I think you're seeing the benefits a little bit of finally being able to recruit for a couple of years with a new facility. I think people forget that, like, basketball recruiting, some, oftentimes, not all the time, but when you're recruiting a good high school player, it's a year to 2 years, depending on how close they are and, you know, how much it's, you're involved, how much you see them early. Like, we got on Chase ahead of other people and did more work early and got him up to campus and did a great job finishing it up, and he was heavily recruited, and having the facilities and all of that in place, I think, really helped us. And Al was a guy we kind of got on with a lot of people in the spring, and just, but when we got on, you know, our facilities were in line with other people, and obviously the chance to play in the ACC, I think, was important, and I think he wanted to get away from the Northeast, and so, you know, that helped us. And then opportunity. I mean, guys see that, hey, you're losing Shelton Mitchell, you're losing Marquise Reed. That's the other thing. Sometimes it's harder to recruit when you have more players. That's why in football, like, to me, it's amazing how you can keep recruiting guys over top of guys when there's guys in front, you know. And now maybe that's – I mean, I guess in football at quarterback, that's the norm. You're just going to have to – there's going to be a five-star or four-star in front of you because there's only one guy playing. But I think all of that worked together to help us get those two kids, and I think those two kids are talented players.
Obviously, Tevin and Curran are eligible as grad transfers, but with Moore in honor, you guys are in the process of
putting in the waivers. Yeah, and to see what happens. And, we just got to kind of wait and see. Obviously, with Clyde's injury, the Nick Honor one becomes even a little more crucial for us, because we went from having hopeful to have 3 point guards to we could be at one real fast. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to figure some things out if that doesn't go through. But, certainly we're optimistic and just have to wait and see.
Are there, I guess, extenuating circumstances with both of those guys?
There are. I'm not going to get into them, but yeah.
Over the 10 or so months we've been doing the Dubcast, we've developed a great relationship with the folks over at the Abernathy Boutique Hotel. In addition to being a great meeting spot for our interviews we conduct with local personalities, it's also a fantastic place to stay. The Abernathy is rolling out a loyalty savings program for 2019. After your third stay, you'll automatically be rewarded with an exclusive offer. It can be applied to future reservations for the remainder of the year. 15% off rooms, 15% off food and beverage at Taps Bar and Cafe. Learn more at theabernathy.com. Quick word about Uptown Realty LLC, headed up by Patrick Enzer, former sports writer who decided to get into the real estate game. Uptown Realty, locally owned and operated out of Sumter, but they serve the Eastern Midlands and PD area with the buying and selling of homes, commercial properties, and land. They also offer affordable new housing in the mid-$130,000s from a local custom builder. Patrick is the sole owner and broker in charge. Grew up in Anderson, going to Clemson games, been in Sumter for 15 years. Loyal Tiger Illustrated subscriber, loyal Dubcast listener. Website is uptownrealtysc.com.
You and Tevin go back a ways. How much did that familiarity and then the obvious proximity to his hometown?
I think it helped. I certainly recruited Tevin hard. Coming out of high school, I thought he's just an elite-level scorer. Good size, good athleticism, you know, a little loose, but highly talented. And we did not recruit him in the transfer situation when he left Texas. For whatever reason, it wasn't right at the time for us, so we didn't really go down that road. But this time there was no question that this was Tevin was somebody that we really desperately needed with Jonathan Bear's injury. It's just hard when you go into the season. We didn't have any seniors. We knew, hey, we'll probably at least sign one grad transfer. You know, we have Jonathan Bear, we're going to have Clyde, we're going to have Amir. Like, we've got three older guys that are juniors that are going to be fine. We had one older guy with them, we're fine. You know, then all of a sudden you lose Jonathan Bear, and it's like, wow, now we're were a little bit, you know, winning in the ACC with young players is extremely difficult unless you're at one of the high-level blue blood programs that's recruiting five-star guys, one-and-dones, two-and-dones. You just, I don't care how good, like even the Pitt guards, I think, are extremely talented. Last year as freshmen, did well, but it's hard. This I thought was, it made sense. You know, I knew Tevin, I knew his mother, AAU coach was involved, all those people. Tevin knew us, you know, hoped that he felt like he could trust us and that this was a way for him to finish his career in state at a place that needed him and was going to give him opportunity to do some things that he wants to do to finish up his career.
Bouncing around schools as much as he has, I guess, suggests some red flags. Yeah. Is there any?
We haven't had any. No, he's been fantastic since he's been with us. I mean, he's been to two schools, and then, you know, things didn't work out at Texas. He goes to Alabama. There's a coaching change. I think he felt like there were circumstances there that weren't going to lend itself to him having the kind of senior year that he wanted. And that's what the whole purpose of the grad transfer deal is to go find a place where you think where your last year is something you can do. You're going to get to do what you want to do to help put yourself in the best position to have a professional career or whatever that is. And so he, you know, obviously graduated from Alabama, and, you know, we're super excited that he came here.
It's the biggest plus with Tevin and Curran that they've been in big moments.
Yeah, just that some of the things you're teaching them, they already have a baseline. And so they pick things up quicker. hopefully they're not quite as in awe of big moments and venues, because I don't care who you are, when you're a freshman and you go into some of the places in our league that you're going to play, and it's normal for your eyes to get a little big and glassy, and hopefully those guys have been in some environments where they're used to that and they just go play. I think that was evident in our trip. I thought both guys competed very hard, brought some maturity to our team, and, you know, depth that we desperately need.
How were you able to stay in it with Moore after Steve? Steve was his lead recruiter. With him out of the picture, can you take us into that hole?
Yeah, just we recruited him a little bit out of high school. We weren't in a Final Three or anything like that, but we had recruited him, had him up on campus, had spent a day with us, got to know him a little bit. I think, you know, part of the factors that helped all of us is he had an assistant coach that was with him at Texas Tech who was from Macon that left and went to Florida. And so when that guy left, it was a little bit like, I think he felt like he was out there a ways, you know, wanted to get back closer to home. So I think, first of all, he was only looking at places that were, you know, within 2 to 3 hours of Macon, and we just, you know, Steve did a good job of kind of recruiting him and talking about our situation. I think it goes back to looking for opportunity. You see a team that's losing four starters and however many points those guys all scored, and you know, man, I got a chance to play there and play sooner, you know, than I would maybe if I go somewhere else. And I think it just all kind of, you know, you talk about what we want out of our program, what we think we can do to help, and if there's a fit, if we feel like it, you know, things match, then it works. And in this situation, it did.
His broken leg, I guess 18 months ago, was gruesome, and I guess he didn't practice much.
Yeah, he had a really hard year last year at Texas Tech. He didn't practice consistently. I don't know that, you know, he actually left school a little bit earlier, knew he wasn't going back, and finished up some classes and stuff and got home. But I know that his rehab went great, and I'm, you know, so it just, there were some things that you know, he's got to do to get himself back healthy, 100% healthy. And I think that's going to take a little while. And just not playing for, not playing competitively. It's one thing to go do a little bit of skill workout and work on your game, and you know, but it's another thing to to be out there competing. Because unfortunately, by him not really practicing much at Texas Tech, he probably didn't learn as much as a normal freshman would learn through the process. If you were there every day, out at practice, in every meeting, you know, and so we need to be patient with Kayvon.
Is he just not as explosive and athletic as he?
Yeah, he's probably not quite as explosive as he was when he before the injury, and then he's just, you know, he's just adjusting like a lot of young guys do to all that goes involved in college basketball.
How far back do you and Coach Goins go?
We don't go back.
Okay.
Heard about him from a couple different people. Earl Grant was one. Tone knew him a little bit, and just had heard some good things about him along the way. Made some call. Tom Pecora, who is one of the assistant coaches at Quinnipiac, was the head coach at Hofstra when I was the head coach at UNC Wilmington. They're on staff together, and I talked to Tom at length about him. I talked to, obviously, people that he worked for previously, and people just seem to think that he's a guy that has a chance to be another, you know, really good basketball coach and star at this level. And you know, he's very bright, and he was kind of born and raised in North Carolina and Virginia. He coached, went to school at St. John's. He's got Northeast ties. I really was leaning towards hiring somebody with recruiting ties up in that North Carolina, Virginia, D.C., Northeast. You know, Antonio's from Atlanta. I just felt like, you know, we haven't been able to do as well up there as I would have liked maybe in my 9 years on the job. And so I was kind of leaning towards, if I could find a guy with a little more contacts and ties a little bit north, that guy was going to get an advantage. And you know, just through the process of interviewing him, I was very impressed with him. Again, very smart. A lot of good things from a lot of different people, and he knows a lot of people, and he's very hungry, and I think that's important at Clemson.
Philip Pearson is his title, Director of Recruiting, but that doesn't begin to describe his vast experience in coaching. What does he
add? That helps a little bit with the whole process. I've known Philip, I don't know how long I've known Philip, probably for at least 10 years, probably close to 10 years. Obviously, because he was with Coach Fox at Georgia, got to know him even more, but had seen him out on the road and just, you know, talked to him several times. And, you know, he has a good reputation in our business. You know, like what happens in our business, you know, a little bit unfairly, what happened at Georgia with Mark. And then he, you know, kind of looking for a job, he ends up at Mercer for a year, and he still has family, his son who's a senior in high school over in Athens. And so I just thought, you know what, this might be a chance to kind of get a guy who's way more qualified than what the position maybe has had in the past. And so we kind of talked. And, you know, he's just very good. He's been a high major assistant for, I don't know how many years, 15 years or more. Has been with good teams, good coaches. And I think he's going to continue to do a good job for us. Lucas was really starting to make progress in that position. Just, again, allowing us to kind of focus our energy on certain recruiting situations, just allowing our coaches to coach our players better. And he was doing some things that administratively took pressure off them. And I think that position just keeps getting, like, we're proving the value of that position every year a little bit more. And it's a little bit the same way with like Terrell McIntyre and his position. Like, just as we've kind of gotten this, you know, I went to Dan several years ago and just talked about, hey, you know, we need to do more. If you guys want to be consistently good, this is what other people are doing. They have way more other personnel, and we have that in football, and we keep doing that. But, and he was obviously very open to it and, you know, excited about it. And it kind of started initially with Nick Bowman, and it was more of like a little bit of marketing our program. We came up with Clemson Grit, just a little bit to brand us, brand me, do some little things to just help us, and then also take some things off the assistants. I think Lucas took it to another step when Nick left and got a full-time job. Lucas was doing some good things and helping us in a lot of ways, and I think Philip will continue that. And obviously, he's extremely well-known in the Southeast, has ties to a lot of different folks, and it's just I really like my staff right now.
Can you reflect on the task of upgrading your talent in recruiting and how that mixes in with dealing with the transfer portal and just how much of a challenge that is?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I probably wish when I first got here that the transfer portal and the grad transfer and all that stuff had been in place a little bit more, because I think it would have helped me in the first, you know, 3 or 4 years when we were a little shy in numbers and we were a little shy in experience. And you know, the team that went to the Final Four of the NIT, we didn't have a senior. And so now it's, you're constantly trying to juggle, you know, you want to do your job in recruiting, and so your job is to go sign, in theory, you know, the best high school players you can get initially. You think that way. And those are the things that day-to-day, again, that recruiting can take upwards of, I mean, there's been kids we've recruited for 3 years, you know, some of them we don't get. And that, like, you start thinking about the amount of time, energy, money, man hours that you spend recruiting kids, and it's crazy, because then you can recruit a grad transfer for 2 weeks and get a pretty good player. Sometimes it's based on you recruit him out of high school and they know you. Sometimes it's a Tevin Mack where we did that, you know. Sometimes it's just a kid like a, you know, Mark Donnell that fits a role. You know, maybe it's a regular transfer like Marquise Reed, who we've recruited for probably 6 weeks, a month, and you get a guy who scores 2,000 points. And then you're sitting there beating your head, you know, self over the head, like, why are we recruiting these kids for 2 and 3 years? Like, this is... You know, I think sometimes what we found, high school kids are still like a little more wow factor and bells and whistles and trophies and all that kind of stuff, where transfers are more about fit, opportunity, relationship. Do they feel like they can trust that coach? And what they, you know, get better with that process. And we kind of found that out a couple years ago, obviously, when we kind of started going this way, you know, with certain guys. And obviously the Shelton Mitchell, Marquise Reed, Elijah Thomas, big class of it, but we also have had the Avery Holmes. We had Marcus Harrison, who we recruited the first time. David Scar, who was a great fit piece guy that we thought could come in and really, you know, fit a need, 6'8 athlete that can guard all these positions, and he was terrific. And again, like, you recruit David Scar for a month, you know what I mean? You recruit Shelton Mitchell, you barely even do anything the second time. So juggling all of that and trying to figure out what's best is hard, you know, because your day-to-day recruiting is usually high school kids. And so you want to come in the office and work, and you want to call coaches, and you want to call recruits and mail and text and graphics and all this stuff that you do for all this long period of time. And you start these kids that are sophomores and juniors and seniors. But then you're also trying to manage, why are we doing all that when we can get just as good a player or sometimes better, and we can recruit him for 6 weeks just by having a scholarship available and the situation being better? And maybe some of those guys are a little more ready to listen to things that we think are important as opposed to some other things. So I think part of what I'm saying is, You know, it's never been more difficult to kind of figure it all out, because obviously at the same time you are having guys come in your office, and, you know, I've said this before, kids are, we ask a lot out of student athletes now. Like the amount of, you know, we keep kids here 8 weeks in the summer. You know, we work them hard. They work all season, all school. There's no off season in basketball. I mean, we're starting practices now on September 25th, September 27th. And so for the 4 weeks or 5 weeks leading up to that, we're doing skill work, we're lifting, we're getting them in shape. Then the season ends, we give them a week off, and that's right back to skill work and weights. And then we give them, a week and a half to go home, and then they're back in the summer for 8 weeks. And so kids who are playing 12 minutes a game their sophomore or junior year are looking at you like, why am I doing all this if I'm only playing 12 minutes? And so you're always a little bit fearful of, like, a guy coming in that you maybe think is getting ready to count on him, and he walks in and leaves. And so it's – nothing surprises you. And now with the transfer portal, it makes it even easier, because you almost don't have to have any conversation. You can just kind of go. And you probably already have a place most of the time. If you're going in the portal, you probably have already got somebody behind the scenes that has contacted somebody that said they'll take you. But the other advantage to that is, again, you can add players to your roster and change your roster more quickly, like we did with Tevin Mack when Jonathan Bear got hurt. It's scary. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a little bit scary at times, because you're sitting here like, well, who's going to come free? Like, what, and are we going to be able to get them? So managing all of that it's a bigger deal now.
The newest supporter of the Clemson Dubcast and winner of the Clemson Area Chamber of Commerce Business of the Year Award, Founders Federal Credit Union. If you've been to a sporting event in Clemson, you've probably heard about Founders already. They are the official credit union partner of the Clemson Tigers, and all Clemson faculty, staff, and students are eligible for membership, as well as IPTE members. Matt Gross is a proud Clemson alum and the vice president for the Clemson market for Founders Federal Credit Union. Membership at Founders has many benefits, great rates on loans and savings products, advice on investments and insurance products, and even a Clemson debit card available for any Founders member with a checking account. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by the NCUA. If you're in Clemson, stop by and see Matt and his staff, 680 Old Greenville Highway, Suite 300, right next to the Walmart Neighborhood Market. If you run a business that conducts credit card transactions with customers, you got to learn about Tandem Payment. Credit Card Processing Company has offices throughout the Southeast, but the one in Greenville in the Upstate, headed up by a 2005 Clemson grad, Tandem's technology allows business owners to offset their credit card processing costs by applying a small customer service charge to each sale they make. Tandem has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and was awarded the Better Business Integrity Award in 2013. Check them out at TandemPayment.com.
So as you're talking to Philip and Anthony, and you're mm-hmm. reflecting on some of those near misses in recent years, mm-hmm. like what's y'all's sort of conclusion? Okay, here's what we got to do better or different. Is there, like, what's the thought there?
It's not lack of effort. There's nobody that's in some of these near misses. There aren't people that have outworked us. There aren't people that have, you know, been to the school more, that have been to the games more, that have done more. Nobody's done more. At the end of the day, we've got to figure out a way to connect a little bit better with something or someone. We've got to continue to sell our mission and what we're about and what we're doing. I feel like our recruiting has improved. We haven't been able to get the home run five-star, but this class, whatever, Chase was a four-star, Al's a four-star, whatever the stars mean, we are involved with more better players, and that has happened the last 4 or 5 years that I've been at Clemson. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten some of them, but we are recruiting a higher-level player. The facilities and everything that's come with it, and some success now, going to a Sweet 16, has helped. People see us playing in postseason, a couple guys on it, getting a chance in the NBA. There's a little bit of things that are starting to help us a little bit, that prove that you can come here and have great success, and you know, but I don't know that there's any one factor that we've found that has kept us from landing that super player. I can just assure our fans and that it's not that we're being outworked.
There's been a lot of energy and words devoted to cleaning up college basketball by the NCAA. What have you, though, seen, like at some of these basketball tournaments? Do you actually see more of a presence there from?
No. No, obviously that's why the calendar is changing this year, and why we went to two high school weekends to try to give some more access to high school coaches, hopefully make them more significant, you know, people in some of these recruiting situations. I think, you know, we're all still trying to figure out, navigate it. You know, it's funny, we have next week is kind of these, it's the NCAA regional camps. But what we've already found is very few of the really good players are going to the regional camps. It's almost like the AAU guys are, you know, trying to get their guys to continue to go play AAU tournaments, even if college coaches can't be there. And so it's, I think we're all still trying to figure out, you know, how all this is going to change and what's going to be affected moving forward.
Do you have faith that college basketball is going to get cleaned up?
Oh, I don't know. I'd like to think that. I'd like to be optimistic about it, but, you know, it's, stuff's been going on for so long that I don't know that it'll ever, it won't ever all be totally clean. It's just not the way it's going to be.
In light of how much you guys trumpet playing within the rules and being upstanding compared to a lot of your peers, you know, I mean, Dan has made that a focal point of his support of you and the basketball program. Was it embarrassing to have Steve involved?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not going to get into specifics. I like Steve a lot. He gave a lot to Clemson basketball, and he's a good person. He made a mistake. Obviously, it was extremely embarrassing to me because I've come out publicly on several occasions and talked about, you know, us always doing things the right way, and I don't think there's ever anybody who's worked for me that could say that Coach doesn't talk about that consistently. And I've told staff, and, you know, we're never going to compromise the program for a recruit. We're just not going to do it. And if that means that we're going to lose players, then we're going to lose players. And if we get, you know, ultimately if that costs us our job, or if it, fans are upset with us because of certain situations, you know, we're just going to have to live with it. And we're going to have to figure out ways around it. We've got to find guys that want to be coached to, and in a program where they do things the right way. Yeah, that was certainly a disappointing and embarrassing moment.
Was the hardest part of that him bringing football into the?
Yes, I felt really, I was really surprised and disappointed by that. You know, I don't know why he would have done that. I think it, a lot of it, what happened in that room with Steve was locker room talk that, you know, just guys do in recruiting and blab. But yeah, that wasn't good for our university. It wasn't good for any of us. Certainly, I immediately, you know, called Dabo and sent a text to the whole football staff myself personally, you know, apologizing and making sure those guys understand how much we respect what they do and appreciate our relationship. And certainly, you know, that was unfortunate.
What was that conversation with Dabo like?
It was fine. Dabo and I are, you know, very good friends, and I appreciate you know, I was embarrassed by it. You know, he was a little mad, which he should have been. But, you know, Dabo's first class. I mean, he's first class people. He understands that, you know, guys make mistakes, and there wasn't. I think he eventually figured out. He probably thought it was locker room talk as well, but obviously the timing of it was very poor. It was the night of the draft, and it's never a good time for that, but it just, you know, for him to walk into it, just like obviously I walked into it, then he walks into it in a public situation, and his players like that, you know, that was really, that wasn't a good situation.
A rundown in the last 18 months of your injury list. Grantham torn ACL. Marquise had the MCL sprain last. Is that right? Shelton Mitchell with multiple knee surgeries. Jonathan Bear torn ACL. Clyde Trapp torn ACL. I guess Eli last year with the ankle. Am I missing?
I don't know. I mean, I can't even. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really. I'm sure David Scar missed a game against North Carolina last year for something. I can't remember what it was. His elbow or whatever. And, some of that's just – it's college sports. It's athletics. It's, I'd be lying if I didn't a couple times say, man, this is hard. You need your full complement to compete against the best teams in our league consistently. There's no doubt about it. Especially when you lose, you basically don't make the NCAA tournament by one game. We certainly had a team that we hoped would be good enough. I take responsibility that we didn't make it. But I also don't want this to come out as like these are excuses. It's part of college sports, and you're going to have some injuries. And at the end of the day, people aren't going to care. You just got to figure out ways to win anyway. And we've had some bad breaks. There's no doubt about it. But we just got to figure out a way to be better.
All right, we will stop it there and plan to do the rest of it next week. Really good stuff, as always, there from Brad Brownell. Really admire his candor. Appreciate him sharing about an hour and a half of his valuable time with us. Appreciate our six sponsors, of course, and also appreciate y'all. 13,000 downloads in the last 30 days. About 150,000 since we started this up almost a year ago, so very appreciative of that. Plenty of more fun stuff in store. Great interviews lined up. Well, maybe not lined up. They're on my list. I'll just put it that way. But really excited about what we have planned for our second year of existence. All right, everybody have a great rest of the week and weekend, and we'll be back next week. Cheers.